It's A Couple Cooks, the podcast with Sonia and Alex Overheiser. We're a couple on a mission to find the tastiest, good-for-you eats you can make in your kitchen. Because the way we eat can make a meaningful difference.
Join us as we chase after real good food through stories, recipes, and conversations about cooking at home and eating well. Welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're glad you're here. If you haven't wrapped up your holiday shopping yet, don't forget that the A Couple Cooks cookbook, Pretty Simple Cooking, is available for pre-order. It's on Amazon. Just search for Pretty Simple Cooking or head to our website and click cookbook, where you'll find a printable holiday cover that you can wrap up and give as a gift.
Because the books come out February 6th. So it is the gift that keeps on giving. You can wrap up that holiday cover download and then let your gift recipient know that the book will come February 6th.
So last week for the holidays, we had Sonia's family in town and we baked up quite a storm.
We did. We made several different pies and we tried some fancy tricks. We braided our pie crust. We hand cut out some leaves. And we even did a lattice pie topping, which none of these we'd ever tried. And we were pretty successful in the first try. So maybe it was beginner's luck, but it was a lot of fun.
Or maybe because your mom's a bit of a master at pie dough.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if I were at the helm of the pie dough situation, it probably wouldn't have turned out as good.
But we did learn a few things. Like, for example, if you just make a slightly more complicated pumpkin pie, it tastes absolutely delicious.
Yes, you could definitely taste the difference with just a little bit more effort. It was incredibly flavorful.
My sister-in-law asked if I should use ground nutmeg that was pre-ground or just shave some myself. And I think even that little step of grating some nutmeg makes all the difference.
Since we're in the mood for holiday baking, we thought we would bring on an expert to the show. And this expert has worked in the White House under George W. Bush and Barack Obama. His name is Bill Yasses, and he is a pastry chef, formerly at the White House. Now he runs an online pie shop called PerfectPie.com. He's just come out with a book called The Sweet Spot, Dialing Back Sugar and Amping Up Flavor. And we thought that was a perfect theme for our show since we tend to focus on healthier or healthy-ish desserts. We were excited to hear from a professional chef how he does it. So here he is. Bill Yasses, welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you just came out with a book called The Sweet Spot. And in it, you say your baking mantra is something that's very intriguing to me. Treat sugar like salt. So can that's you right. explain how you discovered this and what it means?
I should emphasize first, right off the bat, that it doesn't mean use the same amount of sugar as salt. My point is use only enough to enhance the other flavors of your desserts. And that's what this book is about. We have recalibrated these recipes so that there's just the right amount of sugar that the baked item reads as a dessert, but it doesn't overwhelm the other flavors.
And how did you discover this mantra? How did it all come about?
Yeah. Actually, for many years, I've heard people say, home bakers tell me, I made such and such recipe and I didn't use all the amount of sugar. And I found that very intriguing. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So I set out to sort of make an investigation of whether desserts work with less sugar. And we started out always coworkers or recipe testers. We started out by reducing drastically the amount of sugar. And sometimes that didn't work. Sometimes it did. And so I continued in that vein until we came up with these recipes.
Now, as I understand it, there was a special person who asked you to start making healthier desserts. Who was that?
I worked for the White House, and Michelle Obama was my boss, and a wonderful boss she was. She famously started what's called the Let's Move program, which is about healthier eating and exercise. And so while I worked at the White House, I tried to reduce the amount of sugar in the desserts so that they would still be delicious, but fit more into a healthy sort of category.
Not everyone can say that the First Lady of the United States of America asked them to use less sugar in their desserts. Well,
I was very honored and privileged to be in that position, and it was a cherished moment.
So I know there's a lot of flack in the media these days about sugar. We've been talking about sugar. Is sugar the enemy? Should it be kind of vilified and removed from everything?
The quick answer is yes. In a perfect world, maybe we should. But the point is, and of course that's an exaggeration, the problem is not that there's sugar in desserts. The problem is there's sugar in everything else. So in salad dressing, in soups, in all the processed foods, we're not only eating sugar, but we're eating high fructose corn syrup. So the question out there is sugar toxic, and it is in the levels that we're consuming it today. But if we reduce the sugar in other categories, in other foods that we're eating, we wouldn't have built up this tolerance. And that's what I think is active here, is that when people come to a dessert, either they're already satiated with the sugar they've had in the previous courses or in their day, or they're just not tasting it anymore because it's in so many foodstuffs. So my idea was to kind of recalibrate our palate so that just a little bit of sugar is enough. And it was amazing to me, as we were testing these recipes, how quickly you can recalibrate your palate so that you get used to less sugar and you still enjoy the foods.
That's a really great point. And it reminds me of my husband, Alex, and I started eating less meat a while ago. And we still do eat meat. We call it flexitarian. And I know that he has said he can really taste the meat flavor now that he doesn't eat it so often. When he does eat it, it's such a special treat to him. And I wonder if it's like that with sugar when you start eating less sugar as well.
Oh, I'm sure it is. And I think meat is another thing that is not my area of expertise, but we don't need, 16 ounces of protein at every meal. And it allows your palate to adapt to all these other flavors. There's so many millions of flavors. And that's one of the things we did in the book, was we tried to explore a lot of other flavors that have maybe sort of not been exploited before, like spices, like herbs, like even vegetables in dessert. Like we make a kabocha persimmon pie that I find really delicious and really wonderful. And yet those are not common flavors to find in dessert. So what we've done is, if we're going to reduce the sugar and kind of take away that real bomb of sugar that people are used to in desserts, we want to replace it with something else. And that can be the layers of flavor and certain surprises that can be there in our baking and cooking, where we have new flavors and new discoveries to sort of compensate for losing that rush of sugar that we are used to.
So you're kind of alluding to what you call the seven pillars of healthier baking. Can you kind of start at the beginning and tell us what each one of the pillars are?
Yes. Less sugar is the main one. And I say that allows other flavors to come forward when we reduce the amount of sugar in the dessert. We also promote better and more fully flavored ingredients. By that, I just mean good ingredients, whether it's the fruits in season or whole grains, nuts, oils. Those kind of things bring a lot of flavor to dessert and compensate for the loss of sugar.
All right. So making sure to use really high quality ingredients.
That's right. Yeah. No fake foods, no processed foods. We reduced fat, but in an interesting way, I think, because what we did was replace many fats with more flavorful and more healthful fats, such as avocados and nut oils. So oddly enough, I was inspired by Philippine cuisine, where avocados are used in dessert. And in our Sheba from Queens cake, which is a chocolate cake, instead of butter, we use avocado. And it works out beautifully. The cake is moist, it's tender, it's very creamy. And we used avocado instead of butter in that case.
All right. So using more natural fats instead of just the typical butter. Is that number three? Right. Where are we at? Four?
Well, I kind of combined a few together there. We're actually at five. Using herbs, spices, and essential oils. These are very potent flavors. So you have to use them judiciously, but they really add a lot of layers. And what we say is it distracts the palate from the reduced sugar so that you have a fuller, more rounded experience in the dessert.
Right.
And the other way to compensate for the loss of, you know, like a pound of butter in your cake is by using things like fruit compotes or applesauce or sort of a fig reduction, so that what's missing sometimes in when you lower sugar is the structural component or the textural component, which sugar plays in as a role in dessert. So we've often used these other fruits in order to make sure that the dessert holds up.
That's interesting. I actually just did that with some blondies that I posted on our website. We found we couldn't totally take out the sugar because it played such a role in the structure. So we did end up adding some applesauce and some coconut oil and some things to kind of help to bring back that structure.
Yeah. And you're adding the fiber too, which is key. I mean, if we just use refined sugar, it's one thing. But when you add the fiber of fruit, that helps your system to digest.
Well, those are all really great ideas. Do you have an example from your book of a recipe? I know you've mentioned a few recipes already, but a recipe or two that kind of exemplify all of those pillars together.
Oh, well, you could certainly take the Sheba from Queens cake. That is the one where we use avocado instead of butter. There's a hazelnut sponge cake recipe with cherry compote, which is also a good example. There we use hazelnuts and hazelnut oil as the basis for a cake, and it stays amazingly moist as well. There's a whole section on nuts and nut cakes. The plum upside down or plum side up cake, excuse me, that's what we call it. Is an example where we just use enough sugar to bring out the flavor of the plums. And it also caramelizes, which sort of, I think, accentuates the role of sugar. If we're just using white refined sugar is one thing. But when you caramelize sugar, a whole bunch of other flavors become apparent. And so we use caramel in this book as a way to make the most out of the sugar that we're using.
That's so interesting. I know there are definitely scientific properties to sugar that help to create a final dish, as we've kind of been discussing already. So that's really interesting to use it as a caramel and not just as straight up white sugar. Mm-hmm. How about with the holidays coming up? Are there any kind of holiday cookies that you would recommend from the book?
Yeah. There is a whole section on cookies. One in which we use whole grains like millet and rye flour and whole wheat. And there again, we use them in proportion to into what our, you know, final goal is. And it's always to be delicious. I mean, that's one of the things that we struggled with in this book, is that we would want to sort of healthify recipes, but we always told each other and my co-writers that a dessert should never have to be explained. If you're the host or hostess, you should never have to say, this is, you know, a chocolate cake, but. And so we wanted all these desserts to just be, delicious on the face of it as soon as you tasted them. And so in many cases where we might have wanted to accentuate the whole grains or the lower sugar, lower fat, we always erred on the side of making sure it was delicious.
That's a really great point. And I think as someone myself, I've experimented a lot with, as you said, healthifying desserts. I'm really glad that you used that word because I use it too. I definitely went kind of to the extreme of taking out the butter, taking out the sugar, and then which results in kind of just a mushy cookie when I've tried to do cookies or, you know, a cake that has no flavor or substance. And so that is the point of dessert, so that they are to be delicious. They are to be a treat and something that is pleasurable. And so you do have to kind of understand the science behind the dessert and then make sure that you're balancing, as you mentioned, the flavor with the healthiness.
Exactly. And it's so disappointing when we try recipes that have been, you know, adapted for a modern palate, and then it's just, you just don't want to finish them. It's as if the philosophy took over and, you know, that's what's driving the recipe. So in this book, I mean, I've been a chef in restaurants and in caterers and private chef for so many years. And why do it if the people are not going to just really enjoy it as a dessert?
Exactly. And what I'm wondering is, how did the Obamas feel about these desserts that you created?
Well, they really enjoyed desserts, although as they have gone on record as saying, they limited the number of times that they would have dessert as a family to just a couple times a week. But I'll just remind you and the listeners that there's also an enormous amount of entertaining that goes on in the White House. So, you know, your tax dollars were being used wisely because the pastry chef was still cooking for maybe 400 or 500 people a day for the events that took place at the White House.
I asked a few of our listeners if they had any questions for you. And one of our listeners, Marsha, said, I feel like there are three categories of dessert lovers: citrus, fruit, or chocolate. I wonder which one the Obamas were.
Oh, not chocolate. Maybe oddly enough. Definitely fruit. Fruit would be the category. And even more specifically, and again, the president has gone on record as he really loved pies, fruit pies in particular. So in the summertime, we'd go to the farmers markets and get the best fruits. And sort of his taste sort of had filtered down to the rest of the family, although the rest of the family would enjoy a cake now and again. Mostly it was pies that we were making at the White House.
Another listener, Colleen, asked about your story a little bit. How did you get your job at the White House, and how did you feel when you started there?
Yeah, I wish I knew. I can't really answer the question except to say that the person who had the job before me, Roland Mesnier, had been there for 25 years. Wonderful man, hardworking, did a great job, but he retired. And I think it was sort of, they sort of just picked up some newspapers or magazines and started looking at pastry chefs who were out there. And I happened to have pictures of desserts in a magazine called Food Arts, a wonderful magazine. There was a picture of a dessert I made. And so the social secretary, who is the person that gets these things organized, called me and asked if I would come to do a tasting at the White House for the President and First Lady, at the time George W. Bush and Mrs. Laura Bush. And I thought it was a joke when I picked up the phone.
I bet, I'm sure.
It was turned out to be real. And that started kind of a long process of many, many interviews and some visits and a background check by the Secret Service and all of these things. But it was certainly a wonderful moment when I was hired, and I feel very honored and privileged to have served there with so many fine people.
And how long did you work at the White House?
A total of 8 years. I actually started sort of conditionally in 06, and then I was hired officially in January of 07. I left in 14. you know, I mentioned in the, what I said earlier about other people working there. And I just like to give kind of a shout out to the White House resident staff who are so hardworking, and they're very much behind the scenes, very discreet. They rarely get credit. They're not political appointees, and typically they stay from one administration to the next. And they're just great, great public servants. And they know who they are. They don't get much publicity, except the chefs do, because there's recipes. Everyone finds recipes interesting. But the rest of the staff, too, there's carpenters and engineers and plumbers and florists and curators, all of whom go into making the every day at the White House a great experience for the first family.
Well, thank you for that shout out. I guess I never really thought about how much effort goes into the food and the production at the White House, but I can only imagine hundreds of people involved in that endeavor.
Yeah, it's about 96 to be exact. Right. And they stay from administration on. In fact, when I started there, there was a man who had started working during the Eisenhower administration, if you can imagine. Wow. He was in his 70s, but he started as a very young man. And he told me, well, one thing I learned from Mamie Eisenhower is don't throw the leftovers away. That was my first day there.
Wow.
And my jaw just dropped, of course. And it was really true. So he was a great source of stories and sort of institutional memory for how things work there.
How wonderful. And so you left in 2014. Now what do you do with your time?
After I left the White House, I started a program called the Kitchen Garden Laboratory. And in it, we use cooking to teach science. So we have some programs here in New York City where we meet with elementary school teachers and we introduce cooking concepts in a way that is aligned with the curriculum. So they can do some easy cooking naturally using healthy foods, and they can relate it to their science lesson of the day. The other thing I did is I started a pie company here in New York. It's called perfectpie.com. It's an internet company, and we send pies overnight through the internet.
Now, do you ship nationally?
We do. We ship nationally to the 48.
Wow. All right. So we could get your pie here in Indianapolis.
Absolutely, yes, and all over the country, and they're very carefully packed so that they arrive in good shape. That company sort of launched an interesting connection with New York theater. We also supply pies for an off-Broadway show. It's a very unusual connection because the show is Sweeney Todd. If you know the story of Sweeney Todd, it's sort of a macabre subject. But when you go to see the show, you can order a pie, and you show up an hour early, and we serve the pie in the pie shop, and sort of it makes it an immersive theater experience for it.
Very cool. You have really a specific pie flavor that you would recommend from your pie company?
Well, we have several flavors. The apple salted caramel is very popular. We have a huckleberry pie, which is unusual. That's not usually a flavor that people see, but the huckleberry pie is great. Also, our cherry pie. We use Rainier cherries and Morello cherries, kind of a combination that I really like. And that also is a top seller.
That sounds incredible. Well, Bill, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I love learning about all that goes into the White House cuisine and then how to make our desserts a little bit healthier, but make sure that they stay delicious. Your book is called The Sweet Spot, and we thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonia. It's been a pleasure.
I think if there's one tip we can take away from that interview, it's that there's no point in making a dessert if it doesn't taste good.
Exactly. We've learned that the hard way over the years.
Yeah. I mean, if you put a bunch of spinach into a cookie and it tastes like spinach and it's brown and mushy, nobody's going
to
eat it.
Okay. I've never done that to you.
I think you probably have.
Well, I completely agree. And that's something I've learned over the years, is that it's a balance of taking the traditional ingredients and then infusing a little bit of healthifying that dessert just a bit so that it still tastes like a decadent, delicious dessert. And I have a couple recipes that I wanted to share for some holiday cookies that show those principles.
So I know one of them was add a kind of point spice that pulls you to flavor where you don't need sugar to give you a big sugar bum.
Right. So you know those snowball cookies that people tend to make at Christmas?
Like grandma's?
Your grandma's?
Your grandma's.
Okay. Yes, I think she's made these before. So we've created a healthier version of those cookies by using a chai spice inside. So that chai spice is cinnamon, ginger, cloves, and the magic ground cardamom. And with that, you can kind of use a little bit less on the sugar side. So this recipe actually only has 3 tablespoons of sugar for 15 to 20 cookies, which is not too bad.
Now, a lot of times you see recipes that try to take out all the butter and just replace it with applesauce. And we found that that doesn't always work, but you can take that to some degree.
Right. In this recipe, we actually did what Bill mentioned in terms of adding some fat that is a natural ingredient. So we've used almond flour. These are actually gluten-free. So instead of the flour and a little bit of the butter, we've used almonds. So just ground almonds. We do have some butter in there to hold it all together, but it makes a really delicious, cozy spiced snowball cookie that you would never know is a little bit healthified.
Now let's take a classic like gingerbread cookies. I know for me, sometimes it can be just really hard and tough, and that's no good.
Right. I wanted to create a soft gingerbread cookie, and it actually was based on a memory I had growing up of going to this special holiday exhibit in Minneapolis at the Dayton's downtown. They would do a big holiday kind of story made out of animatronic animals.
Sounds like a 90s delight.
Anyway, there were these incredible soft gingerbread cookies that we would get every year there. And I wanted to recreate those. So I think I got pretty close. It's definitely not exactly how those cookies tasted, but we've created a soft gingerbread cookie that's, again, a little healthified. We've used some almond butter in the recipe to bring in those natural fats. We have used a little bit of applesauce, but we still have some butter in there to keep that texture. And then for the spices, we've got some ginger, cinnamon, and allspice to, again, just bring in that cozy, unexpected element to the cookie.
Yes, they're perfect. They're soft and they're delicious. And they cut out like a little gingerbread man, absolutely delightfully.
Oh, you think they're perfect?
I think they're perfect.
Well, thank you. All right. I will place the links to both of those cookies and maybe a couple other recipes we love in the show notes for today's episode.
And make sure if you're making any cookies this holiday season, you share them with friends, because eating a whole bowl of cookies is probably not the best way to cut back on sugar this year.
I thought you were going to say share them with us, like maybe send them to us.
You could send them to us.
Or take a picture and tag us on Instagram. We would love to see them. So I'm kind of in denial that it's December and it's winter. And if you remember from our podcast episodes last season, we had a guest on who helped us to embrace winter, embrace the cozy to make it through. So that's something we're working on with our holiday baking. We're making cozy soups, we're making tea, we're having all of our cozy winter blankets and candles, and just trying to cultivate that cozy winter spirit. So we hope that you are too. Together we can thrive this winter season.
And we'd love to see what kind of cozy you're up to. So tag us on Instagram at A Couple Cooks. And as always, you can find all of our recipes at acouplecooks.com.
Talk to you next time.